Well, that's right. Good morning, Greenwood. Early good morning to you. And right now we do have Tripp Padgett on the line with us here this morning. He is running for the Senate seat, and you need to vote today, but not before you hear our conversation with Tripp here this morning. How you doing today, Tripp?
Good morning, Ann. Doing fine, thank you.
Are you excited about today?
Oh yeah, I'm ready to see the results.
You're ready to see the results. Did you when you started down this road campaigning? Did you think it was going to be this intense?
I had some mere thoughts about it, but when you're actually living it, it's different to experience it physically than it is to think about it in the abstract, for sure.
I'm sure. But, you know, Tripp, I was looking over your background here and everything this morning, getting ready for this interview, and one of the things that I noticed is that you, of course, went to Cambridge, then you went to Wofford, and you got a BA in Spanish and Finance. I was just curious, what did you want to be when you grew up back then?
Well, at that point in my life, I absolutely wanted to go into business. I thought into investment research, kind of dig into the details of balance sheets, cash flows, income statements, kind of get into the fundamentals of how businesses operate and how they could be more efficient back then at Wofford.
And then what changed?
Well, kind of partnering finance with Spanish, I had a very good experience with people. I mean, studying Spanish is really a cultural study. It's not just language. And I felt that I saw how law applied across the board, whether it was to people's rights or to businesses. And I became interested really in the study of law, and I thought it could help me more in business, having an understanding of the framework on which to operate. But then when I got into law, when I was in law school, I realized that the education itself is itself a framework. And until you practice and understand the procedure and the policy behind certain ways that why things are done a certain way, it's not going to help you in business. And then after I clerked for a trial judge and been in practice 14 years, it's become a fascinating area of really of an intellectual pursuit as well. It's just, it touches everything.
Yeah, in today's world, laws touch everything. That is for sure, Tripp. But now that you are running for Senate 4 District, what made you decide to jump in and run for the Senate?
Well, I felt like I had no place to complain unless I was willing to step forward with my time and try to make a difference. And I think that subconscious nag of complaining for me, as I think it is for everybody else, I recognized it as I need to do something. I need to be an option for the voters. And I think everyone else who has that nag, that want to complain is really a sign of I want to help. You just got to turn it around from complain to help. So all those people that have that nag, think about running too. The more options we have, helps sustain our republic.
You know, Tripp, I couldn't agree with you more, except the one thing that keeps a lot of people from running in today's world is the money aspect of running for office.
Absolutely. And I think that South Carolina has to really look at a paradigm shift. And I know that South Carolina is very adverse to change. I'm kind of the same way. I mean, I walk in my house and a chair's out of place, and I'm like, who moved my chair? But what South Carolinians really need to look at and not respond to negatively until it's really aired out is I think we need to move away from a part-time legislature. I think we need to go to full-time legislators who are paid for their worth. They are focused and dedicated to the work of the people. They don't have a distraction of work back home. And I think that opens up the realm of options to not just someone who it can afford it or retired, but you open it up to the teacher who has hands-on experience with our youth, our law enforcement, who has hands-on experience with everybody. You open it up so that you not only get a growth of intellectual capital and experience, but it is something that you would bring in more interest, I think, and more. And when I say more interest, maybe even voters, because if in our race we have five, we really should have 25, and then candidates, and then each candidate excites their people, educates their people, they become interested in government. They vote, and it really creates a I think more participation. But with that, I would also say, if you're going to pay them full freight, the legislators, then we need to look at a term limit situation, because you can't be there for the money. You got to be there to work. But if we want results, you know, that there is no free lunch. I don't want part-time results. I want full-time results, and I want real-time solutions. So I'd say 4 years in the House, 12 years total, but change our terms from 2 in the House to 4, and from 4 in the Senate to 6. But you're limited to 12 years. And then you meet 4 months every 2 years, and then we have a 2-year budget.
Now, that's an interesting idea. You're not talking about meeting every year.
No, and Texas meets
Texas does that.
Once
right.
every 2 years.
Right.
And even though I don't want to model ourselves after California, it's one of the states that pays its legislators for full-time work. So other states have explored this, and I think that South Carolina could mold something particular to our needs. It's just an idea to discuss, but I think a part-time legislature gives us part-time results.
I think you could be right. Now, for you personally, when you're elected to this office, you are going to have to deal with this situation. Is it economically feasible for you?
I'm
just asking, Tripp.
I know.
You're a young guy.
I've been focused on March 22nd, and I have a very accommodating law partner who I believe will support me any way he can. I have to pull my own weight too. I have no idea how that's going to play out, but I think that the work of the people is extremely important. And my generation, Generation X, is in a very we're on the fulcrum point. My boomer parents saw, and the generations before them saw, public service as a duty and a responsibility. Mm-hmm. My generation and Generation Y and Z, according to all the marketing studies, has a very different outlook on government service. And
what is that outlook, Chip?
That government's basically useless. That Generation X, the millennials, which is Y, and Generation Z, they've been called, see private business as a place where, one, they can be paid their worth, and two, they can really make a difference. And to paraphrase John Adams, he said, if the pipeline in the government is not filled with the best and the brightest, it will be filled with others. And if the A-team, if these kids that are going, well, kids, I'm 40, I guess some people still call me a kid, but are going into private business because that's where they make the money and that's where they can make a difference. And the A-team's going to business, well, what's going into government? B-team. So we really need to think about how to change our thinking here and adapt to new generations. Just because it worked for the greatest generation and the boomers, it may not work for the millennials and Generation Z. And we have to adapt to that and make changes to be able to be a vibrant state.
I can agree with you more as far as that goes. Now, one of the things that I know that you are for, which you are swimming upstream on that one, is the gas tax increase.
Yes. Well, it's not just a gas tax increase. I think that there's several other parts that are left off when you put a period after increase.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it is, although it's a regressive tax, and people say that a regressive tax hurts the poor more than it hurts anybody else, I think looking at it from a winners and losers aspect is really kind of dangerous, because that further divides America and further divides our state. We're not winners and losers. We are all users of goods and services and roads.
Sure.
And that if you're going to use it, then everybody should put into it. Taxing just wage earners seems to destroy the incentive for hard work and responsibility, because if you're going to go to work and earn a paycheck just to lose it for someone else to use it, I think that that's kind of a unfair way of going about it on the road tax. But also with the road tax, right now the money that's collected in the road tax doesn't go to roads. It goes to many other things. 1% goes to DNR. Another part goes to DHEC. So there are so many filters that the money has to go through in order to actually be spent on a road. It is inefficient the way that it is spent. Now, I don't have the answer to how to make it more efficient, but I have already looked into trying to contact people at other states, Massachusetts DOT, for example, to figure out how do they use their money, what filters does it go through to get to a particular project. So it is, I think, a long-term, sustainable, and recurring fund that can go to maintenance, and it's got to be done. I think that if any lives are lost because of poor roads, it's truly despicable, because you can't bring that life back, but we can fix a road.
Well, I think part of the problem with South Carolina is the very fact that we've let it go for so long, and now it's actually going to cost more because they have not kept up the roads.
And absolutely. There was a joint chamber study in, when I say chamber, a House and Senate study in 1994 that said roads are getting in, will be at a crisis level, something has to be done, and it was shelved. I mean, it's not like this is a surprise and it just came up upon us. I mean, it's been known. It's just been pushed down the road.
Well, you know, I think the South Carolina Senate and the House are guilty of kicking the can down the road. One of the things that Governor Haley has pushed for is a income tax deduction if you're going to have a increase in the tax on the gas tax. And she wants everything to be, quote, revenue neutral. But in truth, we need a reform on income tax here in South Carolina, and we need the gas tax, and they need to look at fees for whether it's a car or a boat, this type of thing, that they have capped out, for example, $300 on a car purchase.
Yeah. Well, as to the, I forgot your question.
No, well, my thing is that it's a whole package that has to be put together, and at this point we have put in what, $400 million for next year, but made no decision.
Well, it's a drop in the bucket anyway. That's
yes.
A Band-Aid. But as for dollar to dollar, I don't know if you can really make it revenue neutral, because then you're just robbing Peter to pay Paul. I think that there could be some meaningful review of the income tax levels. You call it reform. I call it a review. The brackets are very tight and very low. I would suggest that you bring those brackets, kind of widen them up, and then ratchet it up maybe every $10,000 or $15,000, so that it's not – if you make more than $13,000 adjusted gross income, you're paying 7%. And I think that could be increased, you know, over a series of steps, maybe up to $50,000 or $60,000. You know, and to make it a little more fair on the on those that are really going to work, earning a wage, don't take as much from them, especially if they're paying at the pump.
Sure, exactly.
And as to the gas tax, even the United States Department of Transportation says that the average motorist spends about $1,500 on gas a year, and the increase would translate into about $55 a year. That's 15 cents a day. It doesn't seem like it is a extreme burden on our folks to have safe roads and bridges, especially when large companies are spending money on logistics to reroute their trucks around bridges they believe are unsafe and roads that they feel tear up their trucks. This is directly out of the mouth of the state chamber representative who said Sunoco spends about $5 million a year rerouting their trucks around bad roads and bridges. And yes, that cost is passed on to the consumer too.
Well, sure. It's like the $40 million in lawsuits that they have for busted tires and everything. But one of the other things I wanted to talk about, Tripp, was the fact that this morning in Brussels we had this, looks like a terror attack with the bombs and everything. Down there in the Senate, they are talking here in South Carolina, they are talking about a law that would make it so that the Syrian refugees coming into South Carolina would have to sign up and literally be tracked so that we'd know where they are at. How do you feel about that, Tripp?
Well, one of the main, as you read the intro to in the in our U.S. Constitution, it says to ensure domestic tranquility. And as much as my heart goes out to the good Syrians, the ones that should deserve help, I really feel that the safety of our citizens is paramount. And There's a time to help and there's a time to protect. Unless we can, and I don't know if we can, but unless we can diligently vet the folks, I'm concerned that that at this point there's too much danger.
So if you were in the Senate at this point, you would probably vote for this?
Well, I haven't read the bill. Bills are very kind of complex creatures, and you can't go by their titles. Their titles are very misleading, and they load in, they bobtail in all these other things that don't relate to the subject matter of the of the bill. So,
you know,
I can't promise it because I haven't read it, and that's part of the problem with government today is people are so quick to come out with a position when they don't know all the facts. And as soon as you speak a position, you have basically cemented yourself into one place. And when new information comes out, if you do change your mind, then you're called a flip-flopper, which really shouldn't be. It should be that you're smart enough to take in new information and change your mind. And the media really needs to change on that and realize people are thinking, adaptive beings. But to answer your question, I don't know the bill. I'd rather submit a written position paper on it than give you a 20-second soundbite on it.
Well, it's not a soundbite for me. It's just information just based on the fact that these are issues that are right here in front of us. But what about your desire to bring civility back into politics? This is kind of a unique policy, Tripp.
Well, it may be unique to government, but it's something that is a bedrock principle in the practice of law. In 2000, well, prior to 2003, our Supreme Court saw the legal profession kind of going down the same track that mainstream politics has turned into, and they put a stop to it. And one of the requirements was in 2003, every lawyer and every lawyer thereafter had to take a civility oath, and that oath was something that we would treat even opposing counsel and opposing clients, judges, courtroom staff, whatever, with the utmost respect and civility in written and oral communication. And I don't think it's something that is strange or difficult at all. I mean, it should be human nature. We have seen our kids fall into disrespect of so many people, teachers and law enforcement. And if there's no example set by the legislature, at least as a start, how do you expect these kids to behave? I mean, I'm with my law partner, we prosecute juveniles over 8 counties. And it's really a scary thing to see what our future may hold. I actually adapted the lawyer's civility oath and called it a legislator's civility oath. I mean, the oath that they take right now is basically 4 lines, and it says I'll uphold the state and United States Constitution. It says nothing about their behavior. And I think there needs to be one place that they can look, their colleagues can look, and the citizens can look at and say, you need to hold yourself to a higher standard in writing and in oral communication, and quit acting like a fifth grader on a playground, and let's act like adults and get some things solved if we can.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more, but I mean, I just think that's an interesting position to be taking right now with, as they call politics a blood sport here anymore.
Well, but see, I think that's part of the problem. And if I am a mere ripple in this lake of politics, let it start with a ripple. And maybe in 30 years, the media and the folks might really say, you know what, that was a dumb idea back then, but right now, it's caught on. And if that even makes a difference, fine with me. It's how in the world can you really get to solving the challenges before us if you can't debate differing ideas when you're not angry? I mean, sit down and do it intellectually. Go through all the possibilities. Don't start yelling and screaming and calling names.
I could agree with you more, Tripp. I mean, I really. But I'm going to give you've got 2 minutes here to tell the folks why they should be out there voting for you, and let's wrap it up. And I appreciate you calling here this morning.
Thank you, Ann. I recall a time when children respected their parents and teachers, and we all respected law enforcement. If elected officials cannot set an example for mutual respect, it only reinforces more disrespect. Legislators must respect debate and different ideas. As your senator for District 4 and for the rest of South Carolina, I can't make promises on specific matters, but I can promise that I'll listen, I'll read, I'll research, and I'll look for the facts, not spin, and I'll treat others with respect. Now, this doesn't mean that I'll roll over in a disagreement, but to intellectually debate issues, as lawyers do every day. And tempers may be lost from time to time, as is human nature, but so is seeking out that person to apologize when the case so requires. Success in being on top does not come from tearing down other people. Courtesy, civil conversation, and a belief that we really are a community must be the bedrock principles of our government if we want to really address our challenges. And even if it doesn't work, what's the downside of trying? Consider casting your vote for me today. All votes matter. If you want more information, please check out my website at www.pagetforsenate4.com. Thank you, Ann.
Well, thank you for calling us, Tripp, and good luck today.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.